This edition of Farming the Countryside is brought to you by ProFarmer. ProFarmer provides key information to help farmers make profitable decisions. Go to tryprofarmer.com for your free trial today. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McRae. The cliche says to not put all of your eggs in one basket. This past top producer winner is very successful in farming, but they have also diversified into several baskets, so to speak, and that has allowed them to develop income streams in a variety of markets in rural and small-town America and help those very communities along the way. That's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, and it's brought to you by ProFarmer. Start making confident marketing decisions with ProFarmer. ProFarmer's condensed style is designed to save you time while giving you the important information you need when making those important marketing decisions. And you'll stay on top of profit opportunities with ProFarmer's mobile cell alerts and easy-to-use mobile app. With spring planting season upon us, now's the perfect time for a free trial. Get insights on marketing the grain you may still have in the bin and get ready for the season ahead. Plus, gain insights on the volatile livestock markets. It's all part of ProFarmer, and you can start your ProFarmer free trial today by visiting tryprofarmer.com. That's tryprofarmer.com. Kenny and Brian Mitchell are a father-son team that know a lot about agriculture. In fact, their farm was recognized as a Top Producer of the Year award winner a few years ago. But one of the things most intriguing about what they do is how they have diversified. Sure, farming is important, and they cover a lot of acres, but they also begin to invest in the businesses in some of the communities where they farm. I will let them tell you about one of the biggest ventures. It's quite a story, and it was a lot of fun to hear a father and son share their experiences with it. I began by visiting with Kenny about building his farming operation around Elkhart, Kansas. Talk about where you farm and how you got started out there. You've been out there a long time.
My dad actually lived there in the 20s, and he was just a kid. And when the Depression hit, he had to go. He went to the CCCs. Roosevelt started the CCCs. Went to Minnesota and logged. And when he got out, he had to have a job. And they got him a job in Enid, Oklahoma. But his uncle lived in Elkhart, and his uncle wanted to retire. It was like 1950, and so he wanted my dad to come from Enid back out there, start farming. So he come back the second time and started farming. I guess it's actually maybe 52 that we started farming and bought our first land there in 52.
Talk about the farm then today. What is it grown into, and what do you grow out there?
It's grown way too big. We've got more ground than we can farm. We're around 35,000 acres, and we grow about half of it's irrigated with sprinklers, and corn's our main thing. And then we grow milo, we grow wheat. That used to be a huge wheat country before the irrigation started. I got out of the Army in 1964, and we drilled our first irrigation well in 1965, and I graduated from Oklahoma State University. We'd never run cattle before, and I took some animal husbandry. I majored in accounting, but I took some animal husbandry courses because I thought when I got home, I would start with the cattle. But after we drilled that first well, I never did have any time for cattle. So we've been irrigating like 56 years, I think, out there.
So a lot of that crop, is it going, though, into feedlots and things out there?
Yes, it's all going to feedlots around there. And there's a lot of feedlots around there. And we also planted some soybeans. Now, we've never done much soybeans, but we did plant a little bit of – we're going to try three or four more circles of soybeans this year. The milo, and seaboard. Seaboard feeds a lot of corn and some milo. And the wheat, they ship most of the wheat out.
At what point in the farming operation did you begin to diversify out of just strictly agricultural things, or were you always doing that type of thing?
Well, I would say around 80 when they changed the tax law for building real estate from 30-year depreciation to 15-year depreciation. And we built like 9 convenience stores for the tax write-off. And then we've always been messing around with the stock market, and we helped start a bank, and we just can't ever be satisfied, you know.
Well, there's interesting things to go and explore out there.
Well, I don't know. My dad has always wanted to do something different, and I guess we all three got the bug from him, but if you just farm, it gets kind of boring, you know. I mean, we've got good help, and they really kind of do the farming, and Brian and I both oversee the help, but Brian has spent quite a bit of time on the theaters now.
Well, you led me where I wanted to go. Brian, talk about the theaters. How far back do we go, and why did you get in the theater business?
Well, I've always loved movies. All of our family has enjoyed going movies. It's an escape. I tell people it's one of the best stress reliefs there are, because you can get away and you can get a full story in 2 hours and you can just escape the realities. But basically, Dad kind of alluded, when Seaboard Farms came into our area with a big packing plant, we were looking for ways to take advantage of it. And like Dad said, we have never been livestock people. We looked at building a bunch of hog houses for Seaboard and leasing them back to them, and we know we didn't want to run them ourselves. And so at some point we ended up being able to, Seaboard expanded and did their own live production out there and sold a bunch of ground back to us that they didn't want. Well, that was how we were going to take advantage of it. But another thing was, there was a shopping center in Guymon, Oklahoma that was foreclosed upon. And so it's about half full. So we just, again, like we always do, look at other things. Well, we made a bid on it, and to our surprise, we got it. So all of a sudden, okay, we're going to enter a new venture here. Well, I was looking around a lot of the shopping centers, and one of the things, the key anchors for those is a movie theater. So there was a little 2-screen theater in town owned by a couple, and so we didn't want to put them out of business. So we said, hey, we got this idea. We're going to build. And that at that time was early 2000, when stadium seating was really coming into play. So we thought, hey, let's build a 5-screen stadium seat theater. And so we brought them on board, because we didn't want to, you know, they're local couples. So we got them involved with it, and it was very successful. So 3 years later, we added another 3-screen to it. So we had a little 8-screen theater and filled up the shopping center, and it's been full for 20-some years now. But ironically, it was in 2005. I was actually down in Amarillo, Texas. My wife was having her first chemotherapy treatment for breast cancer, and we were sitting down with an oncologist. And I get a phone call, and the state of Oklahoma had shut down that theater. They forgot to pay $145,000 in sales tax. So immediately, though, what was funny is we immediately started getting calls from all these movie theater chains, because they knew it was a very successful theater, and they wanted to lease it right away. And so we got to thinking, well, you know what, if they think it's a good deal, maybe we ought to take a look at that. So that's how we got into it originally. So we just negotiated with the state of Oklahoma, negotiated with the bankers. We bought all the equipment and started running the theater. And really, at the time, we thought, well, that's all we were going to do. But ironically, in around 2009, 2010, when Hollywood made a push to go to digital projection, it was just one of those once-in-a-lifetime deals that the whole environment was turned upside down. And to switch to digital required $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 per screen for the projector, and upgraded sound and everything. And there was a lot of chains that didn't want to make that investment. And so that's why we grew from one single theater to, I think now we're 107 screens in 15 locations in 7 states. So it was just one of those deals that it was a crazy 4 or 5 years of expansion. But that's how we kind of got to where it started as a hobby, and it got out of control really fast.
Well, I knew that was a big change for a lot of these theaters when that happened. So why did you decide, we're going to get into this bigger instead of let's just get out of it?
Well, again, back, obviously you have a passion for it, just like farming. So we had a passion for the movies. But the thing about digital was, you know, projectionist was an art form, to be a projectionist and splicing the film together and all that kind of stuff. Well, The digital is a lot easier. You know, we don't do much satellite feed, but they can satellite feed it in. They can send a hard drive in, and we ingest it, and the quality's much better. So, you know, back in the day, you'd go in and you'd see if you saw a movie that was 4 or 5 weeks old, it might have a huge scratch down the end of it or something, and you'd have a projectionist that maybe got a little sleepy and didn't quite thread it up right and scratch your print. And also the sound quality. You know, it used to, the sound was on the side of a film. And boy, you have static and scratch and everything else. So the quality of it is much better. And then getting back to, again, with the internet and all the technology and stuff, you know, we can manage it. I get emails every night from every theater with a summary of the tickets and the popcorn sold and all that kind of stuff out. So technology sometimes, you know, is growing pains and bleeding edge of technology sometimes, but it made it a lot more efficient, able for us to manage that along with that spread out like that.
How do you help manage a farm plus all those theaters? I mean, I would think theaters alone would take a full-time job.
You don't sleep. Don't sleep and a lot of coffee. But, you know, but like Dad said, it's back to any business with employees, key employees. And we are very fortunate. We've got excellent employees on the farm. We've got excellent employees on our theaters, our corporate office, our other investments. And so Koch Industries is a company in Wichita, Kansas, and Charles Koch, he talks about there's entrepreneurship, but he talks about intrapreneurship. And what that is if you can get employees to think as owners, give them the autonomy, give them the flexibility to do stuff, it'll be rewarding for you. And so just like a theater in Nogales, Arizona, the concessions are going to be different than a theater in Kansas City, Missouri. And so you let those local, you know, I mean, we're obviously visiting with them, but hey, Brian, let's try this, or hey, let's try that, and giving them where they can take ownership in the decision. Now, does that give them a chance? Yeah, they're going to fail. They're going to make mistakes, but they learn from those mistakes. So so far that's been our business model, and it's worked well for us. But, there's days that you go, oh, my gosh, this monster got out of control. But again, it's those things that when you see a family going in and all the little girls are dressed up in princess dresses and excited to watch Frozen 2, or you see a couple going out for their first date, or grandparents taking their grandkids and stuff. Those are special moments. And then you get movies, that make it like an American Sniper and things like that make a difference, that you go into and you watch a film and the audience is at the end, they get up and they're clapping, or those special moments like that. They're just benefits like that. It's just a quality of life issue.
Kenny, how often do you get to the theater to watch a movie these days?
Well, if I don't see one at least 3 times a week, I kind of get withdrawals. And we have you need to have Brian tell you about we our town's about a little over 2,000. And we have there's a theater there that my father-in-law bought in 1942. And he never did run it. He always leased it out. When I dated his girl, he had an agreement that his family got into the theater for free. And so when I was dating his daughter, why, I'd take her to the movies, and I had to pay 50 cents, and she got in free. But they finally closed this theater down after he passed away, and Brian bought it back and completely. For a little town of 2,000, we get a stadium seating theater with we call it an Oscar lounge, but it's a lounge that we have an alcohol license, it's pretty unique for a town our size, yeah. You know.
So is that just a one-screen theater then that you have there?
Yeah, out of all the locations we have, we actually have two historic theaters. Okay. And they're the last two we've done, but this one was a 100-year-old theater in Elkhart, and it was an old vaudeville theater, and we redid the stage, the dressing rooms, the everything, completely transformed it, made the old projection room into a lounge and fireplace and all that kind of finger foods and stuff. And then we bought one in Texas, again, it was built in 1948, and it was an old balcony type in the whole historical, and very few of those left. So back to kind of giving back to what we've done. You know, it's just it's been very good to us, and so it's kind of cool to have a couple of those historic theaters like that, because it's the old grand staircase and all that kind of stuff. It's pretty cool.
I hear from different people over time that, you know, they used to have the local theater in their small town and it went away or something. Are those good opportunities for people, or would you have to have already a good number of theaters to even think about trying to bring those type of theaters back?
We get calls, emails and texts every week from small towns, really nice people that, you know, it's such a quality of life issue that, oh, please come back and do it and stuff. And it's like, you know, we would love to, but you get these small towns. I mean, you can't make hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars investments, except at your own hometown you might. But you know, for the most part, you'd love to help them. And we try and give them advice and everything else. But again, when you go back to 80 to 100,000 just for a digital projector, you know, it puts it kind of out of most of these small towns' price range, which is too bad.
But if a person really wants to do it, I guess they could jump into the business,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, no question about it. You just like the one we did in our hometown. I mean, it's absolutely first class, top notch. But we just never added up how much it costs. You don't want to know.
All right, so I'm sure you get this type of question all the time, but let's talk about some of your favorite movies over the years. I'll start with Kenny. It can be something from the past or something recent, but any certain ones that stick to your mind that you enjoy more than others?
Well, I've always liked one of the more recent is that Pretty Woman. Oh, my gosh, I like that. And then that Wall Street, I like that. But I see so many of them, they just blur, yeah. You know. And I,
Giants.
Oh yeah, Giants, my number one. I seen that when I was a senior in high school, and yeah, I love that movie, and that's probably my number one. Fridays we generally either go to, we have a theater in Guymon, a theater in Liberal, theater in Garden City, so we generally go to one of those theaters on Friday, take the manager out, we go out and eat. And then we go back and we watch a private movie showing Friday afternoon. And the problem is, right after lunch, I have a hard time staying awake in those things. So when they come to Elkhart, then I get to see them twice. And the second time I get understand them the second time. But yeah, we really, really enjoy. I don't think Brian told you, but on Wednesdays and Thursday night, we have what they call art house movies.
In
Elkhart. And it just in Elkhart. And Elkhart Movie Theater is only open 4 days a week. And these art house movies, probably 75% of them are true stories. And that's the kind of movies we have on Wednesdays and Thursdays.
Okay.
And then on Friday and Saturdays, we have the current movies, but they're usually 2 or 3 weeks older because we only can play them one weekend. If we try to play a same movie 2 weekends in a row, we won't have anybody come. But yeah, that's you know, some guys take up golf, play golf, and other fishing and stuff like that. We just go to movies. Brian's mother-in-law had a place in Honolulu, and Brian has that now. And when we go over there. Well, you know, a lot of people they go to Honolulu for the beaches. Well, we ride bikes past the beaches on the way to the movie theaters. And we'll be over a week, and we'll probably see 6-7 movies while we're over there. that's how crazy we are.
Brian, your favorites?
Well, quickly, just sum up. Dad said he falls asleep with every movie except the only one, and Mom brings this up, the only movie Dad has never fallen asleep is was 50 Shades of Grey. So you can take that however you want. As far as favorite movies, I'm fortunate enough I get to speak to a lot of high schoolers and things, and they ask me this question, so I've got my standard answer. So I actually have 3 movies that are my favorites, and I'll give you the reasons. Number one, the first one, I also concur with that, is the movie Wall Street. And that came out in the 80s when I was in college, and with Charlie Sheen and I just spaced off Gordon Gekko. Anyway, but what reason I like that is that I was about Charlie Sheen's age in that movie with Bud Fox. And that was a movie where a young man was ambitious, and he had a point where did he cross the line to, he wanted wealth and fame and fortune, but he crossed an ethical and moral line. And so I think that's a good thing to, you know, for all of us to examine when you're pursuing that. The second one was a movie actually in the 90s with Family Man with Nicolas Cage and Tia Leone. And same type of deal. It was an ambitious business person, and, you know, for the love of money, the love of power, but yet did he give up, you know, with important things or family and kids and stuff? And so I thought that's a good reflection. The third is the movie The Bucket List. And having been I was a prostate cancer survivor, and to sit there again when you get with Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman, and they're both, you know, terminal, and it's like reflecting back and, okay, what was, you know, making money and everything else, but yet don't forget the things that are important in life. So the three movies I did, I think each one of them has a good message for us at different stages of our lives. So
I'm guessing that the diversification on the farm has been a good thing then.
Well, diversification is good in any business. I mean, you know, again, on the farm, if you're in livestock, if you're in different things, no, there's no doubt about it. We just have always chosen to diversify out of the farm. So, but the main thing is you gotta like what you're doing. You gotta have a passion for what you're doing, and it's a kind of a strange passion, but we do enjoy it. And yeah, I mean, there's challenges when people say, well, Netflix and all this kind of stuff. Well, true, but. They said, but the media talks, oh my gosh, the box office dropped 5% from last year. Well, last year was a record year, so that meant this was the second or third biggest box office season. Okay, that's great. It was a good year for us. You know, but it's like Hollywood is like, the relation to farming is when God blesses us with rain, we'll have a good crop. If Hollywood blesses us with good movies, we'll have a good movie season. But it's up and down, but you don't get freaked out over it. And one old movie exhibition guy told us, everyone has a kitchen table, but you still want to go out to eat. And that's the same thing with movies. You can have the fanciest home theater. You can have everything on Netflix, Disney Plus, everything else. But you know what? Sometimes you just want to go out. You want to sit in a horror movie and be scared with a bunch of strangers. You want to see a romance or see a comedy or something. So it's just in our nature that it's still part of a social experience.
Kenny, why don't I wind up with this? I suppose that over the years you've enjoyed the farming, but has the theater been more fun, or is it just a different type of fun in the farming business?
Oh, it's just been a different type of fun. When I grew up, I lived in Enid, Oklahoma until my freshman year. But as I was in grade school, we had five theaters in Enid, Oklahoma, and every one was just a single screen. And every Saturday, I would go. They would take me down to the theater. They'd give me, they'd give me a quarter, and it cost me 10 cents to get in, and then I could buy popcorn and a Coke for another dime. And there was always a cowboy movie. They always had a cereal that would run like 10 weeks. Well, I couldn't miss next week because I wouldn't see that cereal. And then they'd have a cartoon, of course. Mm-hmm. So I'm like Brian. I've loved movies all my life, and so we really enjoy it. It's kind of relaxing from the farm. But on the other hand, I was like all the rest of the farm kids. I was farm running a tractor when I was 10 or 12 years old, and I always knew that I wanted to farm. I mean, back then I went to Oklahoma State, got my degree in accounting, went through ROTC, and I was either going to get drafted or I had to go into service. And so I went in 2 years, spent a couple of years in Europe. And then I've been in the farm. Well, the only break was those years. But I love farming. That's my number one thing. But theaters is pretty close.
As you heard, it's a lot of fun to visit with Kenny and Brian, not only about farming, but also about their movie theaters. If you happen to find yourself out in southwestern Kansas or one of the other communities where they have a theater, be sure to stop by, especially if you're in Elkhart, Kansas, where they renovated the old theater where Kenny first took his wife on those dates. Thanks for joining me on this week's show. Remember, you can follow Farming the Countryside and our daily show, American Countryside, on Facebook, X, Instagram, and YouTube. Just type in Farming the Countryside or American Countryside. And you can hear these shows in a variety of ways at farmingthecountryside.com, on many local radio stations, or on your favorite podcast platform. If you miss one of our shows, just use those platforms to go back and catch other topics of interest as well. We have not started any spring planting yet on our farm. However, there is planting taking place in northwest Missouri, and I would expect more planters to be running over the next few days, perhaps even ours. We'll see what the weather holds. I hope wherever you are, you're having a good spring and a good planting season if crops are a part of what you do. I appreciate you joining me. I'm Andrew McCrae. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. This edition of Farming the Countryside has been brought to you by ProFarmer. ProFarmer provides key information to help farmers make profitable decisions. Go to tryprofarmer.com for your free trial today.